Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Fawcett says, time for change in Ector County. Early voting started Monday, and Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes and her opponent Dustin Fawcett have been busy campaigning and trying to answer questions voters may have as to their qualifications and track records. Dustin Fawcett. Fawcett, 30, thinks his youth as a positive. What I would say is in my youthfulness, I have energy and a passion for the community. Fawcett said, I have been somebody who has stood up and fought for the Permian Basin. I have fought for the Permian Basin for the past 5 years. I fought against TxDOT and their so-called energy experts. Fawcett studied political science at Millsaps College before dropping out his senior year and going to work at Delta Fuel, where he managed a fleet of over a dozen drivers for a little over a year. He worked on Representative Brooks Landgraf's campaign and then spent 15 months working as his legislative aide in the Texas House of Representatives. After that, he spent a little over 3 years as vice president of the Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance before leaving to become the regional director of the Better Business Bureau. The BBB doesn't allow employees to run for public office, so he took a job as the manager of the MCH's ProCare Clinic in May 2021. Although his detractors say he doesn't have management experience, Fawcett begs to differ. In addition to managing the fleet at Delta Fuel, he's in management now, he said. I'm in a management role right now. Currently, I have 12 employees in my clinic, and I have 4 doctors. One's a family medicine doctor practitioner. One is an endocrinologist. One's a vascular surgeon. And then one's an electrophysiologist. So I manage those 4 doctors as well as our front staff and our nursing staff, which is a combination of medical assistants and nurses and all of that, Fawcett said. He's responsible for managing schedules, and he makes sure that our clinic staff is going through the right workflows and procedures, and then also to ensure that the patients have a strong visit and they feel comfortable in the hospital, especially nowadays with, you know, everyone's concerns. The clinic and the fuel company taught him a great deal, he said. How many people do you know have had 600 employees under them and have handled a $80 million budget? Very few people prior to getting in government have that, but I call on those 2 experiences. You learn what are people's strengths, and you cater to their strengths, and you don't focus on the weaknesses. You utilize their strengths because what some people's weaknesses are could be other people's strengths, Fawcett said. Communication. Having good communication skills is a critical skill for a successful county judge, and Fawcett believes he has them and his opponent doesn't. If elected, he intends to have weekly department head meetings so he can learn the ins and outs of their job and remain on top of things. He's already met with several key county employees, he said. I like knowing how the sausage is made. A lot of people like the final product. They like to enjoy the sausage, but they don't know how the sausage is made, and I bring that up also because I make my own sausage with my family, venison sausage. We make 400 pounds a year. It's an old family tradition in the Hill Country. How the sausage is made is important, Fawcett said. During the last election, Fawcett said he went to the public test of the ballots of the county's voting machines. I saw exactly how these machines work from the very beginning to the end, how the ballot machines work, and then how the tally machines work and all the different redundancies, the securities that go into it, and that's important to know exactly how government works, Fawcett said. I've also made trips to the district clerk's office and to the county clerk's office, was able to ask not only the actual clerks, but their employees. what they thought were some of their successes and what works, and then also some things that, you know, what could we work on to be better into the future? To his way of thinking, it's not just about management, though. It's about being a team player, Fawcett said. I played football for 16 seasons and played football in college, and so that's something I go to a lot is, you know, you have to be on a football team. You have to work as a team in order to succeed, and there has to be communication. There can't be finger-pointing, Fawcett said. If you're not on the same page and communicating, then you're going to have a failure as a team. You could have a tremendous success as an offense. You could put up 40, 48 points, but if your defense doesn't do well and they score 52, then you lose, and so all facets have to be on the same page in the same mission, Fawcett said. Communication has to extend outside the county, too. The county judge needs to be in constant contact with state-level officials and the city powers that be. In the Texas Constitution, it states that the county judge is the head of emergency management, and I think that role was abdicated during COVID, Fawcett said. I think that a lot of it was downplaying of what actually was happening, and I think that it was not taken as seriously as it needed to have been, and also there wasn't as much research into what was taking place as what needed to have been. I think you can tell that the education, and specifically of my opponent, on the issues was entirely at a level that is not up to the standard that Ector County residents deserved. I think that we saw that the first day of the interview at UTPB, how big of a struggle that was. When they pressed for any information, she had none. He already has a relationship with many of the people he would deal with as county judge, Fawcett said. I think that's the greatest difference between us. I am willing to work with our city officials, our hospital boards, the Odessa College Board, and our school district board, Fawcett said. I've worked with all of them on a lot of things. Being aggressive. If elected, Fawcett said he would be an aggressive advocate for the county, and he already has a track record showing this to be true. While at Motran, Fawcett said he proved the Texas Department of Transportation was severely undercutting the number of trucks traveling through the Permian Basin, the number of trucks going into funding formulas, and Fawcett said he began to wonder why there never seemed to be enough money to maintain the roadways in the area. People say I don't know about his leadership skills. You should see me in those meetings. Well, you don't have to. You're going to see the funding coming down the road, Fawcett said. Fawcett said he was a critical part in the discussions about expanding Interstate 20 and Highway 302 as well. Personal life. Thanks to the internet, people have quickly learned Fawcett was arrested for driving while intoxicated in 2016, and his fiancée, Jennifer Hubbard, filed a paternity suit against him in 2019. As for the paternity suit, Fawcett said Hubbard was simply trying to protect the best interests of their oldest child as they were living in separate cities at the time and their relationship was uncertain. They now have a second child and plan to marry in May. As for the DWI, Fawcett said he made a mistake. He entered into a pretrial intervention program and after successfully completing it, the charge was dismissed. People say that the Lord works in mysterious ways. I say he works in magnificent ways. Had that mistake not happened, I wouldn't be anywhere close to where I am now. I own that mistake. I would say that it was the best thing that ever happened to me in my life. Since then, I've been sober, Fawcett said. Without that mistake, Fawcett said he never would have met Hubbard or had his daughters. There's a reason why their middle names are Grace and Faith, because it re-energized my faith, it re-energized my focus on the future, and it really made me sit down and contemplate what type of impact I want to have on this world, Fawcett said. He already wears a ring on his left finger because, he said, they already approach life as though they're married. The reason why we have the May date is because my grandparents were married in May, at this very same church in Harper. My great-grandparents all attended. Here is an historic church within our family, and that was the date that we decided would be a wonderful date, Fawcett said. A lot of folks pushed to have us go have a shotgun marriage prior to this election, and they were saying, well, you're going to lose votes. Well, that's okay, and I respect people's opinions on that, but how much more disingenuous would it be to purely go get married and something that's not full of the Holy Spirit? Goals. Among his goals, if elected, is to figure out what to do about the county's aging courthouse. Hayes promised to come up with a solution to address the 1930s-era building, but has failed to do so, he said. He'd like to have public discussions about what residents would like to see in a courthouse and where it should be located. There have been some discussions about building a new courthouse by the jail on the south side. The first thing is we need to get on the same page with the city and have a discussion, Fawcett said. I've already had a discussion with current and former city council members who have had the discussion about a municipal plaza, which would be a county and a city joint operation where we would see what type of services we could consolidate for the courthouse. That way, taxpayers aren't paying double. You're essentially paying for two in one, and it would, you know, in essence, half the cost of something. If you could have the city and the county services operating out of the same buildings, maybe we operate all of the courts in the same building and save taxpayer dollars. Also, at the top of his list is getting more funding for the county's deputies and detention officers. According to Sheriff Mike Griffiths, there are 16 open deputy positions within the county and 64 vacant detention officer positions. We must be the top-paying sheriff's department in the state. I think that's a no-brainer. And I think that it needs to happen. We must support our law enforcement, and that is what our head of law enforcement, Sheriff Griffiths, is telling me is the answer, Fawcett said. Now, is money always the answer? No. We also need to really broadcast and go recruit. Sheriff Griffiths is recruiting at our high school. We absolutely need to continue to do that work with our high school and maybe some work studies programs. Some internship type deals where kids could have a work study and go right around with an officer, and there's some legality things there that we can work on. And the same thing with Odessa College, you know, with some of their degree programs in criminal justice, and make sure that we're growing our own here. Fawcett said he'd consider taking some of the sales tax money now devoted to the county's Environmental Investigations Unit and diverting it to the sheriff's office. ARPA funds. Last week, the county commissioners approved a contract with a company to vet applications for the county's American Rescue Plan Act money and to audit them as they spent the $32 million. It's a decision Fawcett was adamantly opposed to. I think that I agree with the judge that Ector County deserves to have someone else handling the ARPA funds, but I don't think it's a consultant. I think it's me. And so that's why I ask folks for my vote, because I do think that I have the skill set to do it. I have the knowledge and know-how, and I don't need to be hiring these people. That's what folks elect people for. Hayes says record needs to be set straight. Early voting started Monday, and Ector County Judge Debbie Hayes and her opponent Dustin Fawcett have been busy campaigning and trying to answer questions voters may have as to their qualifications and track records. Debbie Hayes. Hayes, who is finishing up her first term as county judge, bemoans the fact the county doesn't have a public information officer like many other governmental agencies in the area. Much of the misinformation out there wouldn't exist if only the county had someone to regularly share information from within the county, she said. A PIO would have come in particularly handy during the initial months of COVID, she said. I begged the commissioners to please, we have to have somebody. I can't be in an interview, I can't be on TV, and I can't be trying to figure out how to solve day-to-day problems plus COVID problems and be a voice 24/7 to everyone wanting something. I can't do that, and you couldn't expect me to, Hayes said. The commissioners agreed to hire someone for the position, but then opted not to hire the candidate that had been chosen. Hayes said, the county has not been able to fill the position since then. Ultimately, Hayes said the city and the county signed an agreement that was filed with the Texas Department of Emergency Management that city personnel take on the role of spokesman during the pandemic. A PIO could also help clear up the rumors that swirl around Hayes' relationship with city and hospital officials, she said. When you don't have someone that can communicate, then there is that lack of. So getting along with others and letting people know what we're doing, the media makes that perception, because the media is the one that ends up printing the stories that highlight what the city is doing. Channels 2, 7, and 9 will show the city doing wonderful things, no matter whether it's the sheriff's department or whether it's a ribbon cutting. It doesn't matter. There's not anyone to do press releases for everything that the county is doing, so the media perceives us as never doing anything or communicating with one another. Yet, if someone followed me, they would have a totally different perspective on what goes on. Relationships. In fact, during COVID, Hayes said she worked hard with Texas Department of Emergency Management District Coordinator Dudley Dude Speed and State Representative Brooks Landgraf to get the Regeneron Injection Clinic up and running. And despite rumors to the contrary, Hayes said she didn't push for it to be located in Midland. She hoped it could be located in an empty building on State Highway 191 to relieve the patient load at hospitals in both counties. In the end, it was located at Medical Center Hospital because of timing issues. She got a call from TDEM that supplies were on their way. They just needed a facility, so the last thing I wanted to do was go, we don't have a space yet, because I really wanted to try to do it on 191. So can y'all turn around and come back in a day or two? No. My deal was I was trying to make sure that more people got the benefit of it. That's all. Despite rumors to the contrary, Hayes said she frequently speaks with Odessa Mayor Javier Jovan, City Manager Mike Marrero, and council members. She also said she frequently interacts with county department heads. I mentored a lot of them and helped them grow as leaders. They will call me and ask me if they've got an issue that they're trying to handle. How would you do it? What would be the best way to do it? Debbie, because I respect your advice and your leadership skills, she said. Salary increases. A county spokesperson could also clear up confusion over her salary, Hayes said. Yes, she received two raises, but everyone in the county received raises at the same time, she said. Moreover, she remains the lowest paid person in the room when other government officials gather, she said. Back in 2018, a pay comparison study was done by a committee headed up by then County Attorney Dustin Gallivan. The committee recommended the IT department head, sheriff, county judge, and the auditor receive raises, Hayes said. The commissioners voted against the recommendation, but gave a 10% raise to county employees across the board. Another across-the-board raise was given again in 2020, Hayes said. In between those years, the sheriff's office, the county attorney's office, and the district attorney's office received substantial raises, she said. She earns $103,000 a year compared to the Midland County judge who receives $117,000, Hayes said. And while she earns an additional stipend for handling some court cases, it's paid by the state. Hayes also said she took over all the county mental health cases to be a team player. In the past, they were divided up between the county judge and the court of law judges, she said. Sheriff's Office. Although her ads tout the fact the county has increased the sheriff's budget by $30 million to put more deputies on the streets and to purchase take-home vehicles for those deputies, Hayes concedes The sheriff's office is still woefully short on deputies and detention officers. According to Sheriff Mike Griffiths, he has 16 empty deputy positions and 64 unfilled detention officer positions. Hayes insists it's a national problem and not one the county can fix on its own. I think it's just being able to find a person that wants to be really in law enforcement in today's environment, you know, that chooses to do that. I don't really think it's anything against the county or the sheriff or what we pay per hour or anything like that. I don't really think it's any different than the teacher shortages, Hayes said. Her opponents plan to redirect some of the $4 million the county has devoted to combat illegal dumping to the sheriff's office is ill-advised, she said. I guess if that's what he thinks that he can do to try to fix that, well, then that's his prerogative. You know, I think that individuals that live in an environment in which there's a lot of trash and debris and a dump zone might take exception to that, Hayes said. The sales tax that passed under her leadership has paid for the additional deputies and the Environmental Investigations Unit, and she's proud of that fact. Quick hits. Early voting. Early voting for the joint primary election, March 1st through February 25th, will take place at the following locations. Early voting at the Ector County Courthouse Annex, room 104, 1010 East 8th Street, has been scheduled from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. through Friday, from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday, and from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday, and from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. February 22nd through 25th. Early voting schedule at the branch locations will take place from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. through Friday, 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday, and from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. February 22nd through 25th at Kellis Turner Community Center, 2230 Sycamore Drive, the Globe Theater at Odessa College, 2308 Shakespeare Road, Salinas Community Building, 600 West Clements Street, and MCM Elegante Hotel, Hawaii Ballroom, 5200 East University Boulevard. For sample ballots or more information, call the election office at 432-498-4030 in Odessa, or 432-688-4890 in Midland, or visit tinyurl.com/3v7zpce2, Ector County, tinyurl.com/2p84b782, Midland County, or sos.state.tx.us, Secretary of State. Online Auction Fundraiser. Online auction has been scheduled, benefiting Grand Champions Humane Society, will begin at 8 a.m. today and end at 8 p.m. February 23rd at grandchampions.org. Bowling for Fur Babies fundraiser will take place at 10 a.m. February 26th at Diamond Lanes, 2208 East 8th Street. The cost of bowling is $30 for three games with a 9-pin no-tap format. For more information, call Sabrina Everett at 432-352-0173 or visit grandchampions.org. Candidate Forum. A state representative, HD 81 and 244 Second District Court Candidate Forum, has been scheduled for 11:30 a.m. today at the Odessa Country Club, 1 Fairway Drive. Admission and lunch is $25 with an advance reservation or $30 day of event. For reservations or information, text Tisha Crow at 432-559-7066 or email ectorcountygop@gmail.com or visit tinyurl.com/39HPU9XH. Spring Concerts. The University of Texas of the Permian Basin has scheduled some spring concerts featuring Amy Hoosjack on cello. Concerts are scheduled as follows. Today, 7 p.m. at St. Joseph's Catholic Church, 907 South Dixie Boulevard. February 17th, 7 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church, 800 West Texas Avenue, Midland. There are no fees for tickets. For information, call 432-552-3286, email music@utpb.edu, or visit tinyurl.com/2p8rhutp. Performance, Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North Farm to Market Road, 1788, has scheduled the Mavericks at 7 p.m. today. The doors for this event will open at 7 p.m. For more information, call 1-800-514-3849 or visit tinyurl.com/2p9x4su4. Comedy Night. Comedian Alex Raimundo is scheduled to perform today at the MCM Elegante, 5200 East University Boulevard. Showtimes are 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. Listen to radio stations Mix 106.7, KISS FM 103.3, or My Country 96.1 FM for a chance to win tickets. For tables, call 432-288-5321. Town Hall. U.S. Representative August Pfluger has scheduled a town hall meeting from 4:30 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. Wednesday at the University of Texas of the Permian Basin, D. Kirk Edwards Building, Falcons Auditorium Room 1014, 4901 East University Boulevard. Steve-O, The Bucket List Tour. The Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue, will present Steve-O, The Bucket List Tour at 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. Wednesday. For tickets or more information, call 432-227-0103 or visit tinyurl.com/ysb4mrae. Pecos and the Rooftops. Dos Amigos, 4700 North Golder Avenue, has scheduled a Pecos and the Rooftops from 7 p.m. to 2 a.m. Friday. For tickets or more information, call 432-272-6117 or visit tinyurl.com/tpkkutvs. NTO Seniors Giving Boost to Nonprofits. Seniors doing their capstone projects at George H.W. Bush Odessa are hoping to give some lesser-known community nonprofits a boost. Project-based research facilitator Valentina Riviera said she has three groups working with animal rescue organizations, such as Belinda's Cat Rescue, Paws Rescue Haven, and Lone Star Animal Rescue for the first time. Donation stands are up in NTO's common area, Rivera said. Other students are working with the Rainbow Room, Crisis Center of West Texas, Meals on Wheels, and Promise of Odessa. The beauty of Valentine's Day is remembering all those around us that have made an impact in our lives, one way or the other. These projects will run through April as they prepare for their senior symposium, April 21st, Rivera said in an email. Esmeralda Ortega, 18, who is with the group gathering donations for Lone Star Sanctuary, said her group of six set up a giving tree. We figured instead of making like a physical decorated tree, we wanted to do like some sort of mural, Ortega said. Basically, the concept of it is we have all the pets dangling and you grab some scissors that we have there, cut them off, and they have a description on the back as well as things that they need for the shelter. And then you write what animal you got and what you're going to donate, Ortega said. Ivana Olivas, 17, said they have been working on the project since September. Olivas said Ortega went online and found Lone Star Sanctuary and found it was a no-kill shelter. Just immediately it caught our eye. We emailed them and they got a hold of us that same day, Olivia said. Callie Oliva, 18, said they wanted to spread the word more easily. We figured by catering to different holidays and connecting in that way, it would get the word out more and it could add some fun to it. We had a lot of fun decorating our tree and made it to the theme that we wanted it to be, Oliva said. She added that people love it. We did it a pretty large scale compared to what others have, so they think that it's really nice to be able to interact with them personally and cut off each heart. I think they'll enjoy that part as well, Oliva added. Adrian Casillas, 18, is fundraising for Paws Cats Haven. Casillas said his group is going to the shelter and taking care of the cats because donating will actually only do so much for the cats. You actually have to check on their mental health and make sure they become adoptable. We will take care of them and try to get them ready to be with the family, Casillas said. He said getting the cats socialized takes a lot of patience. His group also includes Michaela Sharp and Madison Houston. Some of these cats come from the street. As soon as you walk into the door, they'll run to the corner and for their little plaything. We've been going for about a month now, and some of them have really started warming up to us, Casillas added. Rebecca Farr, 17, and her group are working with Belinda's House of Cats. She found out about the organization because her mother and sister started volunteering there about 3 years ago. I have never gone over there because I used to not like animals. But then we found the little cat. She's really neat. Her name's Sushi. But then I decided I do like cats. So I went over there, and whenever we were given the assignment to make a capstone project, I immediately thought Belinda's House of Cats. Farr said, the group has 6 students. Stevie Vore, 18, said the feedback has been excellent. It's been excellent. Last semester, we had a lot of contributions. We had like a whole caddy full of donations because we did the cat tree. That's over there. It was for Christmas last semester, and so we revamped it to be a Valentine's Day tree for this semester, Vore said. Avia said, it's pretty special to be able to do this for the community. I think it's really special for us to get this opportunity because we don't really get that many chances to get into the community. So being able to do that while attending school is really great, Avia said. Vore said it's nice to see the underclassmen wanting to get involved. Kendall Mathis, 17, said she got her dog from Lone Star. I just know that I didn't know what really went on in sanctuaries until I got him, and I think it's really cool to watch people, not just Lone Star, not just Belinda's House of Cats or Paws Rescue Haven, to just see a whole bunch of other places that are doing similar things that are getting help just because I know some of the big impacts they have on animals, Mathis said. Rivera said she gave the students the challenge of finding a nonprofit organization that people don't regularly hear about, somebody that may really need help either by volunteering their time or by collecting items that they need. The groups talk about their organizations during announcements and take any opportunity to advertise. The capstone project is a requirement for Rivera's classes. It started off with the internships and then their community involvement is this, which is their passion project. The senior symposium will highlight everything that they've done in their 4 years at NTO, Rivera said. Steve O set to perform at Ector Theater. Comedy legend Steve O has long been famous for inflicting damage on himself over the years, most notably in the Jackass movies. His most recently made his return to the big screen in Jackass Forever, but for the last decade, Steve-O, whose real name is Steven Glover, has been putting in work as a stand-up comedian, taking his life experiences and delivering them to audiences around the world. That will include Odessa this week, when the comedian will perform Wednesday and Thursday at the Ector Theater as part of his latest leg of the Bucket List Tour. The Bucket List Tour is a multimedia comedy stunt show where Steve-O will do a variety of super crazy stunts from Jackass. Of the stunts and what's exciting about it is that it's all stuff that I would never have been allowed to do for Jackass because of various laws and stuff, Glover said in a phone interview. I just have no rules at all. It's such a crazy show that we have dudes passing out in the audience. That happens in most cities that we go to. It's this weird phenomenon, guys fainting in their seats. It's pretty wild. Glover gave a few examples as to what to expect from his show, one of which includes a stunt where he actually has a medical professional administer general anesthesia drugs to an IV in his arm while riding a bicycle. That was my idea, Glover said. I wanted to get knocked up by general anesthesia while riding a bicycle, and to me, it's so awesome how nuts that is. For him, it's high-level stuff. He said it is a lot of fun, too. Steve-O has been doing this comedy show and various incarnations of it for 12 years now. I've developed this craft of performance stand-up comedy over the past couple of years, Steve-O said. Granted, it evolved to where all of my worlds converged. All the crazy physical stunts, all of them are rolled up into this show. It brings all my strengths into one event. It's a completely original approach, which I'm proud of. It's totally unique, and I'm ready to raise the bar. People have known Steve-O for creating those crazy moments, but with each stunt, he raises the bar for craziness, and that's something he says he's happy and proud of. Doing this show is so much fun for me because it's so shockingly good, and I so enjoy how people respond to it, Steve-O said. The last time the Jackass comedian was in the Permian Basin was right here in Odessa in 2013 for a stand-up comedy show. I had a huge turnout, Steve-O said. It was one of the more popular markets for me. That really felt good. The show went pretty well, and I was pretty thrilled about it. For Steve-O, Texas has always been one of his favorite states to perform. I've always found that the audiences in Texas are very respectful, Steve-O said. I haven't had to put up with a bunch of disruptive people or like that. That's fun. I appreciate that fact so much that the crowds in Texas had such good energy, but are also respectful. If you go, what? Steve-O, the bucket list tour. When? 6 p.m. February 16th and 17th. Where? The Ector Theater. Where to buy tickets? https://www.ticketfairy.com/. Angel Eye offers families comfort. Medical Center's neonatal intensive care unit now has cameras that let parents and family members keep track of their newborns, even when they can't be at the hospital. These multi-use cameras allow care teams to share patient status updates and memorable moments with real-time text, pictures, and record videos. Angel Eye also allows for a continual video feed from the baby's isolate crib through a protected password, HIPAA-compliant website, a news release detailed. The cameras are at the bedside of the baby. It allows the families and the moms and dads to be able to see the baby when they're not able to be there. Or if mom's really sick and she's upstairs in postpartum or labor and delivery, it just gives them that extra comfort of being able to see their baby, said Tammy Watson, unit director of the NICU and pediatrics. The Angel Eye system even has a thing where we can turn it on night view. So when it's dark outside and the rooms are going to be dark, we're able to turn that on and they can still see their baby even when it's dark. They have had families from Alpine, for example, that had other children and were only able to go to Odessa once or twice a week to see their baby. They can log on anytime and see their baby, and it's very comforting to them, really decreases their stress, Watson said. The cameras are on 24/7. The only time they are turned off is when they're doing patient care, Watson said. As soon as they're done, Watson said, the camera is turned back on. We have the primary and the secondary, the mom and the dad, or whoever she decides needs to be the secondary. They're able to get text messages from us. We tell them the weights at night. We give them information about feeding, things like that. That really gives them a lot of information a lot quicker, Watson said. Families can add as many people as they want to sign onto their account. No matter where they are, grandparents, aunts, or other relatives can view the baby. Watson added that there is no limit on the number of people who can log in. It is HIPPA compliant and very secure, she said. The company for the Angel Eye makes sure of that, and they also work with our IT team to ensure it's secure. Watson said there are 28 rooms and 15 cameras. That's something we're going to be working on over the next year, is to purchase the rest, and that way we have cameras in every room, she added. Watson said they had been working on this project for about a year. It takes a lot of time with IT to get all of this put together, Watson said. We went live in December. She added that the families have loved it, especially with COVID, when the only people able to visit were mom plus one, which is typically dad. You've got all these grandparents, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters that can't come in and see the babies. This has been really great for them to be able to be part of the baby stay and see the sweet babies, Watson said. She added that the small cameras really help an emotional connection with family members who can't be there. It's also available on a free app from MCH. They're already really bonding with those babies, even though they're not able to be here, Watson said. It has helped the nurses as well. We have noticed we're getting a lot less phone calls from families. They're sitting at home, they're worrying. They will call several times, which we don't mind at all. But we have noticed a downshift in how many phone calls we get because they're able to look for themselves and make sure everything is good. So that helps our nurses tremendously, she added. Watson said babies can stay in the NICU anywhere from a few days to 4 to 6 months, depending on how early they were and how sick they are. The Angel Eye camera system is made possible by the ACE Hardware Foundation through their Helping Hand grant program. Through this donation, Children's Miracle Network at MCHS was able to purchase 15 Angel Eye cameras, the release said. Haley Swack, Program Director of Children's Miracle Network, said MCH is one of 10 program hospitals in the United States to receive funding from these cameras. Swack said they applied for the funds in 2020. We're just so proud and so thankful to the ACE Hardware Helping Hands Foundation for this donation, Swack added. Brandy Labin was sitting with her daughter, Kinley, who was born late last week at 5 pounds 2 ounces. She and her husband, Lawrence, lived in the Houston area and are adopting Kinley. It's been really helpful with the Angel Eye and having her as a new mom. When we first were here, we thought we would be going home a lot sooner, Laban said. She added that they have a Ronald McDonald room at the hospital, so that's been helpful too. Whenever I'm not here, I'm able to watch her just like a baby cam and know what's going on with her during the day. We're from the Houston area, and so grandparents are able to log on. Husband's logging in and able to check in on her, and they're sending me messages and stuff. It's been really convenient and nice to have it, she said. Kinley is in the NICU because of her sugar levels, Laban said. They're trying to stabilize her. She was what they call not early but not full term. She was right in that cusp in between, so she's a little underweight. She was 18 and a half inches long, so she's pretty long, but she's just really, really tiny. And so with her sugar levels being off, they had to bring her down to the NICU to try to get it stabilized, Laban said. She added that she likes being able to see that Kinley is being taken care of 24 hours a day. However, Laban said Wednesday, she hasn't left the baby's room about 10 times since she got there. Her family members have enjoyed being able to look at Kinley and see her sleeping peacefully. My father likes to call and say, hey, she's moving, go help her. But it is so, you know, just like little interactions like that. I guess it makes them feel comfortable not being able to be here with her, Laban said. Something good is about to happen, coming to Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. The Gaither Vocal Band will bring the Something Good is About to Happen tour to the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, February 19th. The concert is scheduled for 6 p.m. and doors open at 5 p.m. A multi-Grammy and Dove Award-winning recording artist, Bill Gaither will bring the tour to nearly two dozen cities this spring. Taking the stage in 2022 with Gaither and the Gaither Vocal Band, featuring Wes Hampton, Adam Crabb, Todd Suttles, and Reggie Smith, will be vocalist Lady Love Smith and Gene McDonald, as well as Gaither's musical entourage. Composed of Kevin Williams, Matthew Holt, and Greg Ritchie, a news release said, "Growing up in Adriana, Indiana, Gaither said gospel music was a foreigner in the early 50s when he was growing up. It originated from Texas, the Southwest, and obviously from the South, Atlanta, Nashville. So I could only hear it by radio and by records," Gaither said in a phone interview. He lives with his wife of 60 years, Gloria, not far from the house he grew up in. Gaither said he met Gloria when they were teaching school. He went to college, majored in English, and taught English. Gloria Gaither also taught English and French for about 10 years until their songs caught on. That wasn't the plan. The writing was just something we loved to do, but the songs caught on, got outside the city limits, outside the country, outside the state, outside our country. When they started catching on, we started traveling," Gaither said. "We traveled all over the world. We've been to Europe, Asia, Africa, South America, Australia. We've sung everywhere. But I haven't strayed far from where I was born, so I grew up here in this little town and loving the music," he said. He added that they both wrote poetry and Gloria is an unbelievable poet. "I was a musician and had written some things myself before I met her, both the words and music. But after I met her, the combination of the two was a lot more powerful than just me by myself. That was an extra bonus of the marriage," Gaither said. "In our case, we were drawn more to each other because of the philosophical, artistic, theological, and spiritual reasons, and the music, which is a bonus, was just thrown in, and we said thank you," he added. Gaither said he and his wife are admirers of creating writing, whether it's in their genre or not. "We go into the Nashville Hall of Fame Songwriters Congress every year because we know many of these people, many of those country writers. We're just in awe of people who are able to put words together and move people," Gaither said. "Good writing is just good writing, and in our field it happens to have a message tied to it. Good creativity is just good creativity," he added. Gaither said they perform other people's songs as well. "We have from the beginning, mainly because we just love good material," he added. For example, they sing Through It All by Andre Crouch. Gaither said, "It's a great song. I wish I'd written it." From the time they started, Gaither said they had tried to limit their time on the road to 50 to 55 days a year to have a more normal home life. They also tried to cluster the locations together. "It's hard to say no when the phone's ringing, but saying no might mean that you're saying yes to something better. But if you've got three kids and other responsibilities, and I think we have a well-rounded life that involves friends from other circles rather than music. I love artists. I love music, but we're a little strange in a way that it's kind of great to get outside our field and find out how regular people spend their time. I love sports. I love reading, and I love history. It's fun to be around people who want to discuss other things besides music," Gaither said. He noted that Gloria is a Steinbeck scholar who has written papers on Steinbeck at Steinbeck Quarterly. Along with their three children, the Gaithers have seven grandchildren. He said the group has changed over the years. "Our personal performing started in the 60s with our trio, my brother and my wife, Gloria. We did that for about 20 years, from about 66 to about 86. Then the vocal band grew out of that," Gaither said. "There are five groups now. Over the period of about 30 years, we've had about 16 changes because of various reasons. Three have died. Tenors get tired of singing high notes. This present group has been together for close to 10 years now, he said. His advice to aspiring musicians and songwriters is get a day job until someone wants to buy and support your music. You better get realistic about it. I taught with the idea of teaching for the rest of my life, and my night job, which was music, overtook my day job. I still think it's the best advice, Gaither said. In our case, we do it for two reasons. I believe in the message, I believe in the gospel, and it's a great way to share your faith. But secondly, I love the art form. The art form is just beautiful, he added. Death notices for February 15th. Benita O. Gonzalez, Midland. Benita O. Gonzalez, 88 of Midland, died Saturday, February 12th in Midland. Celebration of life is scheduled for 2 p.m. February 20th at Nally Pickle & Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are by Nally Pickle & Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Annie Mae Jones. Annie Mae Jones, 87 of Midland, died Wednesday, February 9th in Midland. Memorial service is scheduled for 3 p.m. February 15th at Salvation Army Church, 3500 Park Lane in Midland. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland. Alicia Evans, Odessa. Alicia Evans, 101 of Odessa, died Monday, February 7th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 10 a.m. February 18th at Northside Church of Christ. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home of Midland. Martha Jean Clifton, Crane. Martha Jean Clifton, 75, died Saturday, February 5th in Crane. Services are pending with American Heritage Cemetery, Funeral Home, Crematory of Midland.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Changes to sense of smell and COVID. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 76-year-old man in good health. Around February 2021, either just before or just after my first COVID vaccination, I noticed a difference in my taste. I am aware that this can be related to COVID infection. My smell is okay, and while I can taste fruits, vegetables, juices, wine, beer, salads, butter, etc., I have trouble fully tasting food that doesn't have a lot of flavor to begin with, like meats, seafoods, breads, cheese, pasta, nuts, etc. Some have no flavor and some partial flavor. Other times there is some flavor as I take a bite, but it diminishes quickly. I have never had any symptoms of COVID or even a sniffle in 2019 to present and have had all three vaccinations. But the timing of this issue is suspect. Could I have had COVID and not known it? Could it just be my taste buds, or should I see a doctor for an evaluation? Answer. New onset of change in smell or taste around February 2021 is highly likely due to COVID infection, and there are many cases of people who otherwise had no symptoms but developed this issue. While most people have loss of both smell and taste, it is possible to develop one without the other. Losing taste without smell is probably the least common. Loss of sense of smell seems to be related to injury to supporting cells in the nose, but the mechanism for taste loss isn't so well known. While this is a common problem with COVID infection, it has only rarely been reported with vaccination. There are other potential causes. Some medications, such as ACE inhibitors, may cause loss of taste. This may actually be related to the mechanism by which COVID causes taste changes. Infections in the mouth, some inflammatory diseases, mineral deficiencies, and neurological diseases are other potential causes. But in absence of any other symptoms, none of these seem likely.
This is the Dear Abby column. Woman anxious to avoid making the same mistakes. Dear Abby, My boyfriend Aaron and I have been together almost 10 years. We are both divorced from narcissistic spouses. We have discussed a future together, and we are working toward it. It's taking so long because Aaron's children are quite a bit younger than mine. I'm an empty nester. His kids are just going into their teens. I am also working on getting my career established. We get along well and seem compatible in every way, but one thing bothers me. Aaron can be passive-aggressive. It isn't often, and it generally isn't just over petty stuff, but when it happens, it is very hurtful. I've been going to counseling to resolve some issues from my childhood and first marriage, and recently realized I have some toxic traits I need to work on and heal. Unfortunately, some of that toxicity has spilled into my relationship with Aaron and hurt him. When it happens, he reacts passively aggressively for a bit, then things seem to go back to normal. What can I do to get over the hurt I feel when he acts this way? I don't want to repay hurt for hurt. I want to break the cycle. Signed, Healing in the Midwest. Dear Healing, if your toxicity is what causes Aaron to react with what you interpret as passive aggression, he could be simply nursing his wounds. Talk with your therapist about including Aaron in some of your sessions. If the therapist agrees, tell Aaron you think your relationship could be improved if he's willing to go with you. If the therapist does not agree to the joint sessions, it might be worth your while to discuss couples counseling with another therapist. Dear Abby, I've been seeing a married man for more than 30 years. Everything was fine between us until recently. I have begun to suspect one of my female neighbors is seeing him as well. I'm contemplating getting in touch with his wife and my neighbor's husband and telling them about my suspicions. I need to know what to do so this relationship with the neighbor will stop. I know by telling on him I'll lose him, but if the neighbor is after him because of his money, I don't want his wife thinking I'm the one taking it from him. What should I do? Signed, Nervous in Texas. Dear Nervous, despite the odds, you have been fortunate in having had a drama-free affair for 30 years. Because you have no proof that your lover is involved with someone else, it would cause less damage to everyone if you shared your suspicions with him. I guarantee that if you reveal your 3-decade affair to his wife, you can kiss this romance goodbye. If the neighbor couple finds out you accused her, you will make enemies, particularly if your suspicions are not true. I find it ironic that after helping your lover cheat for decades, you are now angry at him for cheating. I see nothing to be gained by creating a scandal to save your injured pride. You can write to Dear Abby at DearAbby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.